Support for The Andrew Haynes Show is brought to you by LiveSource, the premier app for auctions at live events. LiveSource is an online auction and raffle platform that allows your fans and supporters to bid and buy from their phones and computers from anywhere. LiveSource cannot be simpler or more effective, which is why more than 300 professional and collegiate sports teams and thousands of charities and athletes utilize their services to generate revenue and collect data. If you sign up with LiveSource now, you will benefit from their lowest possible pricing and they'll waive their upfront fees. You can email them at hello@livesourceapp.com. That's hello, H-E-L-L-O, at livesourceapp.com. In today's episode of The Andrew Haynes Show, we sat down with Bob Hoffman, the president of the Tucson Roadrunners. Personally, he has spent 2 decades at the professional sports team level, and most recently was the executive vice president for the Quad City Mallards of the ECHL. Outside of his professional life, he has served on several nonprofit boards, formed a charitable foundation focused on youth hockey in the state of Utah, and served on numerous panels dedicated to sports management, business growth and development, and personal standards and habits. He is a graduate of Kent State University with a bachelor in fine arts and currently works out of Tucson, Arizona. Here's his story. We hope you enjoy.
All right, back for another show. Today, I've got the president of the Tucson Roadrunners, Bob Hoffman, with me. How's it going, Bob?
It's going well, Andrew. How are you today?
Doing really good. Thanks for joining me. Hopefully, the weather is nice in the southwestern part of the U.S. Pretty warm.
I usually, I don't get a fancy backdrop, and I try to put my window back here because I talk with so many people back east in the Midwest and Canada, and I try to let them know it's beautiful and sunny here. So.
They forget what the sun looks like sometimes.
Right. We see sun probably 360 days a year, it feels like, down here in Arizona. So, it's been great. It's certainly the reason why a lot of people retire here and choose to live in Arizona when you're dealing with January high temperatures of 70 and 75 degrees. So that part of it's nice. And under a normal circumstance, we'd be about 2 weeks from pitchers and catchers reporting. So, Arizona has certainly got that nice weather caveat to it.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably one of the only other areas besides where I'm at in Florida. It's like that I would want to go. I want to be in warm weather. That's for sure.
It can really spoil you. I'm originally from the Midwest and got used to the snow and never mind getting out and shoveling some stuff. And then came down here for about a decade and then moved to the Midwest back for a year and thought, I need to get back to Arizona.
I'm not going back to that cold. No. So kind of walk us through. So what part of the Midwest are you from? Where did you end up going to school?
Yeah, I'm from Northeast Ohio. So I'm a one of those people that are very proud sports fans that follow the Browns and the Indians and the Cavaliers. And, certainly we're still riding high over the last couple of days with what the Cleveland Browns were able to do. So
that was a great win.
Sports fan, grew up there in Northeast Ohio in a small town called Cuyahoga Falls. And most people have never heard of it, obviously, except if you're a big fan of Tommy Boy, the movie. It's really interesting and funny. They actually at the airport in Sandusky, Ohio, which to my knowledge, I don't think they have an airport in Sandusky. The spot that they were trying to fly back to on an emergency flight was Cuyahoga Falls. And they don't have an airport there either. But I thought that was funny that the town actually got a little bit of recognition that way. But Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, went to Cuyahoga Falls High School played some different sports there in Cuyahoga Falls. Ended up staying in Northeast Ohio to go to college at Kent State University. So a MAC school. It was, about an hour from home. And, planted those seeds there in the Northeast to start before I started my journey and my career in the mid 90s.
Did you, when you were in school, were you kind of focused on sports at that point? Was that like, the career that you thought you were going to, pursue?
It's what I had hoped. My degree is actually in broadcast journalism. So I always wanted to be on the air and I always tried to kind of move myself towards being a sports, broadcaster. Back in those days, the 6 o'clock and 11 o'clock news and then the Sunday night sports shows were huge. The internet hadn't fully taken over to where you got all of your messaging and information through different platforms that you can subscribe to, or whether it's via your mobile device. So I really thought being a 6 o'clock sports guy or an 11 o'clock sports guy would have been fantastic. And at Kent State, they have a tremendous program there It's a television station called TV2 that's right up there with some of the broadcast stations coming out of Akron and out of Cleveland. So I got some really good hands-on experience and training there. And so many people back in those days wanted to be in the sports side of things. So I barely got my chance to kind of scratch that surface. So they seemed to think that throwing me into the weather side of things was the better spot. So I got some experience doing on-air weather and learning a little bit about that, but then always wanted to do the sports side of things and was fortunate enough through some great internships I had with back then Sports Channel Ohio, which I was there the actual year that they merged and were actually acquired by Rupert Murdoch and Fox to become Fox Sports Ohio, and was able to work a little bit with the Indians and Cavs, and then got my opportunity through internships to kind of get out there and get on the radio. So my initial introduction into the sports world was in that broadcast side of things.
Oh, nice. And then when you got your first opportunity with a team, was it kind of in that same, the broadcasting? And is that kind of what you were thinking? You're going to be play-by-play and communications?
It was. I got really lucky. It was extremely funny because I was just trying to put my name out there anywhere as it was getting close to the start of a basketball season, of a hockey season. I was in August really just feverishly looking, and had an opportunity in Little Rock, Arkansas, a hockey hotbed, right? Had an opportunity as they were about to start training camp, needed a broadcaster. I had no tape as far as hockey would go. I had a little bit of a tape that I had put together from baseball and basketball in college and just doing some small things that way. And then, of course, just doing some demos on your own, some ghost demos. So I was able to put something together and send it to them. And I don't know that they ever even listened to it or cared. They just had somebody interested in doing hockey in Little Rock, Arkansas. Yeah, so they brought me down, and that was my start. I did play-by-play that year for a team called the Arkansas Glacier Cats. It was an absolute learning-on-the-job experience. I remember the first game that I did opening night, not knowing any of the players' names, and broadcasting the entire game based on numbers. So,
The
puck to 80, 80 back to 22. I was expecting to be thrown out the door as soon as I got back into town, as that was a road game. And they were pretty gracious, a good group there, really had a lot of fun. But I think the most important thing about that opportunity was it really allowed me to cut my teeth and learn an awful lot in an industry, in a world that I knew nothing about.
Well, and it sounds like you kind of were just thrown to the fire a little bit too. Like, hey, figure it out. You got
exactly. They didn't even have a radio deal yet. So I got into town, and the first thing they told me to do, they said, well, now that you're the broadcaster and you're here, that's great, but now we got to get you on the air somewhere. So good luck. So I actually was able to get out and get us on a gospel channel, which is, funny in itself, as I'm sitting there calling violence in the sport where, in a league called the Western Professional Hockey League. So there was line brawls regularly, and I had to try to clear that through the gospel channel.
We're going to go to break right now. That's
exactly.
So how long were you there in Arkansas?
I was there for 1 year, and really tried to, I've always had a at least attempted to have a strong work ethic and really wanted to learn. I went into that opportunity knowing this was probably a 1 year, position, and that, the next step was going to be the most important. And it turned out to be accurate in that world, as I was kind of able to use that year to learn an awful lot, improve my writing, improve a lot on the communications and PR side of things. Always had confidence in my ability to be a broadcaster, just learning hockey was the part of it. So I was able to, parlay that into an opportunity in the American Hockey League the next year, in my second year, and that growth continued from there, and really felt probably about 3 years in that I really had rounded a corner and started to really learn the ropes and try to learn as much as I can about organizations, about the sales side of things, the marketing side, advertising, and really started in that third year to try to do what I can to be as valuable of a resource and show value to my organization. And had the opportunity to work for some great leaders and some great people that taught me an awful lot that, gave me the opportunity that I have today.
Yeah, no. And I think what you said though is key, where you wanted to show your value. And, you know, I always see a lot, I get a lot of resumes and see a lot of people posting and they want to be in broadcasting or communications. And, you know, talk a little bit about some of the non, you know, play-by-play or communication stuff that you had to do, you know, kind of to add that value. Because, you know, a lot of teams have you outselling or doing other stuff as well.
Yeah, that's a great question, because especially for a young person getting into the business, I think they feel, you know, not all of them, but oftentimes that it's very focused and that a lot's just handed to them. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I got to the point to where I really used my broadcasting as my therapy. When I put the headset on, I knew that, you know, I was escaping from all the other chaos that was around me. And, you know, I think that value that you can show, certainly everybody's selling. So you've got to go out and promote and create a really good branding opportunity for your organization to show what it is that you provide, what your value is as an asset to your community, you know, whether that's through appearances, whether that's through speaking engagements, whether that's through flat sales and getting out there and trying to create new partnerships. Business development's a huge side of things, is, you know, in the minor leagues, especially where that team in Arkansas and then my second opportunity in Louisville, Kentucky was, you know, those teams weren't rolling in it. They needed to make ends meet any way they could. So every day was me scratching and battling, because I knew that was important, not only for my growth and development, but it was important for the organization and to keep them afloat. And I wanted to make sure, you know, I could go to bed at night knowing that I did my part and tried to motivate and push as many people as I could to do their part. And I think that leadership component started to really mold itself there in that third year, to where I led a little bit by example because of my work ethic and because there was no such thing as punching a clock. A 9-to-5 in this industry just doesn't work. I did my best work typically when most people were out of the office and it was, you know, 10 o'clock at night. I could turn on the radio and just, you know, just absolutely soar. And I think that showed, by leading by example, that, you know, the reason that our PR side of things and the reason we get such great coverage and the reason why in a basketball town like Louisville, Kentucky, that the hockey team can get front page most of the time is because of those efforts, those relationships and that work, and then to push them to do better in their particular side of the team, whether that was in the ticket sales side or in corporate marketing or whatever it may be, in the merchandising side. So I really think that you know, leading by example helped for sure. And that was just me wanting to get better and knowing that this was the industry I wanted to be in for the rest of my life. And I feel very fortunate that I'm able to do that.
Was hockey kind of like, when was that moment where you were like, okay, I'm kind of getting into hockey? Because you mentioned, you know, you had to really learn hockey. And, you know, obviously as a sports fan, you know, you can adapt to different sports. But was there a moment where you're like, all right, I'm a hockey guy now?
Yeah, it really was in that first year. It was about the midway point of the season there with the Glacier Cats that I, you know, just kind of wanted to assess myself. I tried to do personal assessments as much as I could, but I sent a tape off to an NHL broadcaster just to kind of get some input and, you know, gracious enough to let me know what was going on and give me some of his insight. And, you know, it really kind of led me to feel, you know what, I'm getting the hang of this. And I really, you know, in listening to myself and listening to the tapes, I'm like, you're not a bad hockey guy. You know, as this comes, you're starting to figure this out. You're learning it. And up to that point, I was always a hockey fan growing up. Even in Northeast Ohio, we were only about 90 minutes from Pittsburgh. So I grew up a Penguins fan and following Mario Lemieux and Jaromir Jagr and those guys during all of their glory days. So I always loved hockey. I knew the sport. I enjoyed watching it. I thought it was absolutely the best sport to watch. So I really enjoyed that side of things. So I knew the game, at least, not from a, you know, an intimate level of being on the bench or playing or understanding it from a playing standpoint. But I did know the game, so I felt comfortable there. But then it was learning those ins and outs and getting to build those relationships with the coaches and the players to learn more about the sport. And, you know, it didn't take long to where I realized, you know, every opportunity that I wanted to use to kind of climb the ladder, it was in the world of hockey. I never once looked outside the sport and never really felt like that was home. And to this day, obviously, you know, with COVID and certainly a lot of people having to reevaluate and look at their paths and where they would be heading next type situation, you know, I'd be, you know, lying to say it didn't enter my mind to think, you know, what would another opportunity potentially be? And I can never get myself comfortable with the fact of being outside of this sport in some capacity, in some fashion. And I really, I hope that I'm fortunate enough to be able to do that for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I mean, it's great when you're involved in something that you have passion for and, you know, just it's not work at that point. When you, so I saw that you ended up going back home, so to speak, you know, with, in Youngstown. Was that when the was that the first year of that franchise? Because I know it was somewhere around the mid 2000 mark.
2000. Yes, it was. And, you know, that's that was always, as I got into the sport and had to move away from home, you know, that was always apologize for that. That was always the dream, was really to get back to Northeast Ohio. I have a 5 brothers and sisters, large family, and wanted to be there with them. So when that opportunity came up, I worked for the company that was actually building the arena there in Youngstown. At the time, it was the Chevy Center, now called the Covelli Center. Yeah. And they were putting in a hockey team, a hockey franchise there. So that was my first, you know, kind of opportunity to get back to Northeast Ohio and try to launch something. Is we were there literally wearing hard hats, taking people on tours through the building, hoping it was going to be ready for opening night. So it was right there to launch the building and launch that particular team. Was there for 2 years. And it was one of those kind of reality moments that, you know, Shook, you always do want to go back home. And I tell people this, and young people this, when I talk to them all the time now, home's not always the best place to be. So I spent 2 years there and realized, you know what, it's not so bad out west. And right. It's a much more you know, modern culture. And I like the weather better. And I look for that opportunity to get back out west. I came to Youngstown from Salt Lake City, Utah. And then once we left Youngstown after 2 years, I went to Arizona. And that was really the start of the last, you know, 17 years or so down here in Arizona.
How was the transition moving to, you know, like a management position, you know, with Youngstown? Were you still handling the communication side and all that? Or was this more, you know, on the business side of, you know, sales and marketing and everything else?
A little bit more towards the business and sales side of things, but I'm one of those people that, you know, I always try to sponge things in and try to learn as much as I can in different areas. And I think that's one of the great things about, you know, the lower levels, is that because of smaller staffs and because people are required to do so many more things, you learn a lot of different areas and you have that ability to do it. And I actually enjoy that part of it a lot. So I would never be pigeonholed into one particular area or department, and really loved that crossover. I think it all ties together and it gives you the opportunities to put together some great programs and some great partnerships by, you know, having your hand in the marketing, advertising, sales, and communication side of things. So when I went over as an assistant general manager in that organization and kind of moved to that path, I wanted to keep my hand on as much as I could. Knowing that I would stay extremely busy and have a hand in trying to, you know, make the Steel Hounds up there in Youngstown, the team I worked for, as successful as possible. So I did stay. The communication side has always been something that I've enjoyed, and I really feel like it's probably my bread and butter to a certain degree. But I also, in that side, I think probably from the salaries that broadcasters made in the early days, I always enjoyed jumping into sales and finding ways, if somebody was going to pay me commission,
make some extra money.
Absolutely. If I was going to get commission on something different, you know, then I never disliked doing that. I try to pass that message to everybody as well, as I now lead teams, and to let them know that, again, as I said earlier, we're all selling, and you know, it's something you really should learn, whether you're the receptionist, the community relations person, or a ticket salesperson. Learn how to get somebody to make an impactful decision to buy something and to invest in what you guys are trying to do.
So after Youngstown, I saw that you jumped into the league side. How is that compared to team? I mean, I've been on both sides too. I've been on the league and the team, and like I like different things about them. And you know, there's just, I like the competition side on the team. You know, I like that sense of, you know, competition on the league side. You know, you're able to help out a lot more people and kind of use your expertise with the teams. But how was that for you?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I, you know, Andrew, that you've dealt with the both of them, you know exactly the, you know, what the day in, day out is. And I, at that stage of my life, the attractive part of it was the travel that comes on the team side of things and being away from home as much as you are, whether it's, I want to say the last day I was out on the road was about 96 travel days throughout the year. So it's 96 nights in a hotel room. And at that time I had a young daughter, you know, wife at home and wanted to have that opportunity to see her grow up. And I was missing too many things. I remember missing a ballet recital that she had when she was like 3 years old. And I was, you know, somewhere in Texas, you know, calling a hockey game. And I remember thinking that, you know, I want to do it a little differently. This isn't, you know, where I want to be. Getting to the National Hockey League as a broadcaster was something that was attractive, but it wasn't the be all end all for me. That wasn't what I was going to be defined as successful from. So that league opportunity really kind of created that path because it's far from a 9-to-5 job, but you're at least centralized. A lot of the work can be done from home, opportunities to be there for those types of events. So for 10 years, I did stay on the league side of things, enjoyed all the things I did there. And again, it created an opportunity to learn on the operations side of a franchise and learn as we launched 5 different franchises in those 10 years to be an integral part in launching successful franchises. So I think that was a great path to take at the time, you know, but you do miss that team side. I always would tell people, you know, during the course of a season, even if you're an awful hockey team, you're going to win. You know, you're going to come in the morning on a Monday after a great weekend and say, right, whether we sold the building out or whether we won in a shootout, whether a player had made the all-star team, you're going to win.
Right.
And at the league level, there really were never wins. And you never had those celebrations. Now, they weren't always losses either, but
right,
I would always kind of look at it that pretty much when your phone rang, it was somebody calling to complain about something.
Like, uh-oh.
Yeah, nobody called to say great job or things are going well in this area. They would call to say, you know, your officials are terrible, or you know, the schedule is awful. I've been on the road for 2 straight weeks. Whatever it was, it seemed like it was always a negative. So you just dreaded the phone ringing. And after 10 years of that, for the people that make that a career, I respect them to death because they have to be more balanced than any other humans on the world to be able to stay at that league office level because it definitely has some stress to it. And it's not, I mean, people get into sports and enjoy working and doing what they do, I think, a lot because of that fun and that competitiveness of it. And at the league level, it's just not quite as fun.
Yeah. Now, and you're dealing with all those personalities, with the owners and
every one of them is different and every approach is different. And you had to have your own way of working with each individual franchise and knowing that this one, you can talk realistically to, and this one, you better use kid gloves and so on. So you're right. Those personalities make it quite challenging.
In a world where people are more aware and plugged in than ever, it's not enough to just have a great product. Consumers are looking for brands they can relate to. That's where Egghead Creative comes in. Everything they do is powered by deepening the connection with your brand. And every time you do business with them, they'll build a bespoke team of highly specialized creatives designed specifically around what you need. For more information, visit eggheadcreativestudio.com. That's E-G-G-H-E-A-D creativestudio.com. Or follow them on Instagram at Egghead Creative Studio. Now back to the show.
And when you were at the league and you helped launch those teams, you guys were also launching new state arenas too in most of those markets, weren't you?
It was, yeah. It was a really cool model that I enjoyed being a part of. Global Entertainment was the name of the company, and you're correct. I'll give you an example. In Allen, Texas, where the Allen
American
play. Yeah, it was the process of going through the politicians and getting all the the funding in order to be able to build a brand new event center, an entertainment center, a multi-purpose facility. The particular arena in Allen, there was an accompanying ice rink that went with it, a practice facility. And it really helped launch, whether through strip malls, hotels, a great area right there in Allen for industry and for their community. So being a part of that was a lot of fun. And then to have the hockey team kind of come in on the back end, and that was your primary tenant that would play in these arenas, it made it really, you know, really fun. And in most cases, you know, we were able to be successful. The Kansas City Mavericks used to play as the Missouri Mavericks in Independence, Missouri. Yeah, that was
another kind of similar, you know.
Yeah, we had the same kind of DNA to them.
But it's like I think the size of them, it varies a little bit facility to facility, but they're about the perfect size for, you know, the level
of league sports. I think you're right. I think people can get carried away thinking that they want 12,000 seats to sell out.
Crazy. And,
you know, you can make it work with a lot less. I mean, here in Tucson, our capacity is 6,500. And, you know, I honestly, you know, think we could even do 1,000 less and really create that environment.
Say 55 is perfect. Did you guys build that one? Were you part of it?
We did not. This one down here is about 50 years old. It's an older facility, has gone through renovations in the last few years. They had to do a lot of work to get it ready to house an American Hockey League team. So it does have a little bit of a newer feel in some areas, but then it's also got that that kind of historic kind of touch to it as well, as kind of an old time barn, an old time arena. So it's got a little bit of the best of both worlds, but it's about 50 years old.
When I was in St. Louis, the CHL came in, the chill. And so I remember following that. And just, you know, all over the years, I've, you know, being on the league side for arena football or soccer, it's like you're looking at different facilities. And that's why we always came across the buildings that you guys, you know, built back then. And, you know, all of them are, you know, great facilities. So,
yeah, we tried. We certainly, like I said, the DNA was about the same with them all. And the ones that were built a little more recent and had a little bit more money in them in bigger metropolitan areas, like in the Frisco and Allen area, and then right outside of Kansas City, certainly had a little bit more, you know, nuance to them, a little bit more of the bells and whistles than what a Youngstown had in building the Chevy Center up there. Also built an arena in Prescott Valley, Arizona, where the Arizona Sun Dogs played. But again, a smaller community without that metropolitan area complementing it. So it wasn't quite as snazzy as what you would have found in Allen, Texas.
So now, I mean, without all that chaos, what the hell do you do all day? Like, what's the day-to-day for you being team president?
Well, it runs, you know, all the operations of the team, which, you know, being here from the start with the Roadrunners, it was a lot of fun because it was the first time I really had that opportunity to come in and be able with a startup to sit there and say, let's plant our flag. How do we want to be defined? What do we want to be known as in this community? The Arizona Coyotes, obviously great support for us and helped us mold that vision as to how we want the state of Arizona to be viewed, or how we'd like the state to view us. So that part was fun to really kind of create that you know, importance to the community and becoming an asset to what is done here through the nonprofits, how we can help raise money where we're able to, but then also try to create hockey fans in a non-traditional market. This particular area had the Ice Cats from the University of Arizona, which was like a club team that played. It wasn't a Division I team. It was a club team. But they had a really good following and a good fan base. So people knew more about hockey here than I gave them credit for when I first came to town. There are a lot of transplants in Southern Arizona. So I would daily run into a Bruins fan or a Blackhawks fan. You know, so that part was nice, too. So when trying to define what our role was going to be here initially, when you looked at that 90-day plan and then the one-year plan, we adjusted it on the fly a little bit, really, because there was a lot less education that we had to do than what we thought we'd have to do down here in doing our market surveys and studies. So that was a benefit. The other piece to it was that, you know, it's a very young, energetic town as far as families and that demographic of families trying to get out and do things for their entertainment dollar and ways to really grow the sport was right there for us. They just needed the opportunity. When we came to town, the youth program was less than 100 kids that skated. And right now it's currently several hundred with a waiting list. As many kids as you can get on the ice or on the ice right now here in Tucson, as we continue to grow the area, the future hopefully holds a practice facility or extra sheets of ice here in town for us. We'll be able to continue to grow that sport. And that's really a credit, I think, to the demographic down here of being so family driven and really trying, you know, for us to really kind of harness those younger fans that we know will be there for the next, you know, several decades.
Is your team owned by the Coyotes or is it private ownership?
No, correct. Yeah. It is. We are one of the 19 American Hockey League teams that are co-owned by their parent franchise.
Nice.
So Alex Morello, who recently bought the Coyotes a little bit more than a year ago, he is our owner as well. And it's been such a breath of fresh air to have that new ownership push in and release the group and all the new bodies that have been brought in up with the Coyotes, including CEO Javier Gutierrez. You know, it's great to hear their vision and to see how they want to take over the state of Arizona when it comes to hockey and to be that community presence. It's the most community-driven ownership group that I've ever worked for and had the honor of working with, and you know, really duplicating a lot of things. I mentioned the support we get from the Coyotes. And duplicating a lot of those things that they do up there down here in Southern Arizona really gives it that statewide feel, so that you know that if you're seeing it in the Glendale area, in Phoenix or in Scottsdale, that you're also going to see it down in Tucson or Suarita.
And I think that the community aspect is huge when you're in a non-traditional, you know, market like that. You know, it's not, you know, generations and generations haven't grown up playing hockey. So, you know, I think the more you can get out there and build that personal connection, you know, the better. How far are you from?
I think that's a great point, because you're not dealing with people that really even know the rules in some ways, and people that maybe it is their first hockey game. So how are you going to get them to you know, grow that affection towards your marks and towards your brand, and how, why are they, what are they going to say about the Roadrunners in the off season or after they go to a game when they head back to the office or to their schools? So I think that community presence and that community input is huge. And the Coyotes are doing that up in the greater Phoenix area. And we're just trying to duplicate that down here in Southern Arizona.
How far away are you guys from Phoenix?
It's about a 2-hour drive to Glendale. To get to the airport, to the southern part of Phoenix, it's just a little bit more than an hour. So, you know, it's not bad at all. It's really beneficial for our staff, for our players. We'll take our staff up for games to watch the Coyotes play, not only from an entertainment or a getaway type atmosphere, but also from a learning experience. We're able to shadow different people that are in our roles up there. So
our
ticket manager can come in and go up and spend some time with the ticketing crew up there with the Coyotes. And we do that with every department and with that crossover, as we work very closely together.
Well, I think that's important, because, you know, as a leader, for me, there's nothing better than helping develop, you know, someone and seeing them move on to, you know, a bigger opportunity. I mean, it sucks in the short term because, like, hey, you don't want them to leave, but it's good to see that growth and spend time on trying to help them be the best that they can, because, you know, while they're there, it's just going to benefit, you know, the club. So
100%. I mean, that's a big role of what we do down here. And I think it's important to accept that from day one, which we did. That was a part of what our plan was. We wanted people, whether it was with the Coyotes organization or elsewhere, we wanted to develop them and to watch them grow. We've put two of our head coaches are now in the National Hockey League, and we're heading just into our fifth season. So
wow,
a very short time period. We've got two coaches that are now assistants in the National Hockey League. We've seen athletic trainers head up. Obviously, players, we've had a very big input in doing that. And then my staff as well. I should know the exact number off the top of my head, but at least a handful of our workers over the past 4 years now either work for the Coyotes or other major league level organizations and teams.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So you've been in this, you know, for a couple of years in hockey. Tell me about some of like the craziest like promotions you've seen. I mean, because, you know, minor league sports and even hockey, they have some cool promotions from time to time. Anything that you saw or you were part of over the years that kind of sticks out?
Well, I think a fun one that I was a part of, at least I've seen so many that are, you know, I wouldn't even know that I'd attempt trying. But one of the ones that I remember that I had nothing to do with, I wish I did, because it was a lot of fun. But as it kind of came together and I was able to promote it, then I really joined in and got into it. I wish I could remember who actually came up with the idea and give them credit for it. But when I was in Louisville and playing off of, you know, the stereotype of Kentucky and those folks down there, they kind of joke about that and laugh about it, as it's clearly not what people think it is, you know, as far as, you know, like they think it's out of a scene from the movie Deliverance, or, you know, it's just not right. It's a great, great state, and Louisville is a great town. Yeah. And we really played off of that persona jokingly with a toothless night that we had there with a dental sponsor. And the giveaway coming into the game was a bag that had toothbrush and floss and toothpaste in it. And then we had the ticketing component to that night was a discount if you showed at the box office that you were missing a tooth. So really good crowd at Freedom Hall in Louisville. You know, for us, a great crowd was 7,000-8,000. I believe that night we came close to 10,000 folks there in Freedom Hall for our toothless night. But that was one that I was a part of many years ago that I don't know we could get away with that now. But back in those days, it was a lot of fun. But, you know, you see different ones that are just kind of stunning. Like, I wasn't at the game, but I did hear about it years later. It was right before, a couple years before we did that Toothless Night. So somewhere probably in the early 2000s, a team in New York did a Ugly Baby Night, and they wanted to try to crown the ugliest baby. I believe it was in Albany, New York, and they wanted to crown the ugliest baby. And the joke, it was presented by a child therapist, and the joke was free therapy for a year. That would go with it. And I remember seeing pictures of that and seeing kind of the news grab onto it. That one I always joke and kind of chuckle at and think, how did they ever get away with that?
As a parent, maybe back then, now they would, yeah, people would be like protesting or something. It's like, my baby's ugly.
We did a fun wedding promotion when I worked in Salt Lake City with the Utah Grizzlies, where we did a wedding on ice, except, you know, instead of taking what a lot of teams do with the one couple and finding one lucky winner, worked with our radio partners there, which was a 99 number on the radio. I think it was 99.9, but we did 99 couples that we married on the ice. And it was right around the time that My Big Fat Greek Wedding was a popular movie out in the box office. So it was My Big Fat Utah Wedding. And that was a lot of fun. And one of our players actually came out onto the ice and renewed his vows as one of those 99 couples, got clearance from the head coach to be able to do that. So that took a lot of logistical planning and a lot of putting together and had so many moving parts to it. But CNN picked it up at the time to kind of show it and, kind of promote it for us. And then to see, once it kind of came through, to see what we had pulled off was kind of fun.
Yeah, that's cool. And then, I mean, that's just memories for all those people, even the people that are just there for the game. They're like, this is.
I couldn't believe we found that many couples that would want to actually get married on the ice. But we lined up carpets, kind of rows of carpets along the ice, and marched them all out to the wedding march. And one minister standing up at a podium at the front of all of them. And he gave them, they went through their vows that way.
That's pretty cool. I mean, that's what, you know, minor league sports is about, though. It's just getting creative and having fun, you know, and that's a big part of it. So
I think you've got to be willing to step out of your box and to try to be creative. Minor league baseball does it better than anyone. And when you see some of the cool different promotions they do, you know, a good chunk of them fail and some of them fall flat. But if you don't try, you're never going to be able to pull one off. And, I think that's one of the cool things, like I mentioned earlier, that you're able to do at this level, is that creativity gene is still with you, and it's not gone, and it's not as focused, and it's not, it's not dealing with maybe some of the rigidness and strictness that might be at the higher levels.
Yeah. It's so true. I don't know if you've seen, I mean, recently I posted on LinkedIn about, hey, if you're out of work, you know, yada, yada, yada. Just, hey, maybe I can help connect you. Well, the post went crazy. It got over 500,000 views in like 2 weeks.
Wow.
Thousands of messages, couple thousand comments. But there's a lot of really good candidates out there looking for work. So what do you look for when you're trying to fill some positions? Like, is there any, you know, key characteristics that you focus on?
Yeah, you know, it really depends on the role, but I'd say in general, at least, I think culture is a word that's thrown out there so much when teams are changing culture. And, I mentioned earlier of the Browns' big win, and that's the word that everyone's throwing, is what the difference is that a new ownership group or a new coaching staff and a new general manager can change a culture somewhere. So I think that that's a big part of what I look for, is great fit. If you have somebody who may be the best salesperson in the history of the world, but that really creates a toxic environment or alienates the rest of the staff, so that everybody's not pulling in the same direction, it can really hurt an organization. So I really try to look for people that are a good fit. People, experience matters, but it's not the be all end all, because a part of, as we said earlier, in trying to grow the abilities of people and to try to move people along as a development team and a development league, that's a big part of what our organization is. That development comes a lot of times from young people with very little experience. So you find that they do have the capacity for whatever role they're heading into, that they'll be a great personality, that they'll be a great fit, that they're going to want to learn, that they're going to run through a wall for everything that you put out there. I mean, nothing's worse than, people that talk about what's in their job description And those kind of people down here in the minor leagues, certainly, but at least with our organization, that's just not going to work. A big part of the people that I look for, the people that even though they may be applying for a marketing position, they're already asking questions about business development, and they're asking questions about operations and what's a game presentation plan. Those people are the ones that want to get an overall look as to what the entire organization is all about. And maybe it just kind of models the path that I took and the fact that I tried to learn as much as I could about all those different areas, as opposed to just staying stuck in a broadcasting role or stuck in a public relations role. I think that's a big piece to it. So I try to look for people that are curious, that ask great questions and want to know more about the organization. And when you check on them from the references, or you see what their work ethic is like, then you can figure out what kind of person they are to the best of your ability. Sometimes you miss, you know, but for the best of your ability, you can figure out who they are and whether or not you feel they're going to be a very positive influence in your organization. I constantly tell our staff down here, I mean, you've got a choice every day to be positive about what you do or to be negative. And
the negative people can leave. I mean,
And if that's, you know, and it, you know, everyone's got their own personality, and I'll tell them, you know, well in advance, you know, if that's what's the best office for you, or if you don't feel that you can be a part of that positive train that we're trying to get on down here, it's probably not going to be a great fit for you. It's certainly not going to be for us, but I think you're going to shortchange yourself for a couple of years and being in a role that's not going to develop you and just isn't a good fit. I mean, you want to get the employees that are a great fit for what you're trying to accomplish, but I really do truly believe that works both ways. And just because, especially now with so many people out of work and looking for jobs, just grabbing the first one that comes along isn't the best thing, because you're not going to be able to showcase what you're able to do, and you're not going to be able to learn if you don't have that open mind to be positive for what that organization's trying to accomplish. And you're going to end up 2 years later looking for a job again and wasting 2 years where all you did was just collect a paycheck.
Yep. Well, I mean, you hit it on the head though with, you know, and I never really thought about this until I started this podcast and I kept hearing it, but, you know, it's about the people. So like, meaning like, you know, I've kind of been on the ownership side forever. The last few years I've been like, look, I want to get out of ownership. I want to, you know, find a role somewhere. And I was like so focused on just finding the role and not the right people in the situation. And I think it's kind of really opened my eyes up now as I look at potential opportunities. Because listen, just because that's, you know, this team A doesn't have the right culture or fit for me doesn't mean team B won't, and vice versa. And so it's kind of opened up my eyes into that. And also that not everybody's a good fit for you. It doesn't mean that they can't be successful somewhere else. It just, you need a, you know, they need to be in a different situation. And so
we hope they will be successful somewhere else, you know. And when you talk about the people, it's so true, because you know, I mean, right now, unfortunately, you know, with a smaller staff that we're dealing with and everyone's doing 10 different jobs, you know, but what I've learned about the last 10 months is this is probably the most productive that we've ever been here in Tucson with this smaller staff. And one of the best staffs I ever worked with was 8 people. And it was back in San Antonio, Texas, with a team, the Iguanas, that the Iguanas ended up having left town when the Rampage came to town, only room for one team there. But there were 8 people that worked for that organization. And we got more done than, you know, other organizations in our league that had 20 people on the staff. And now here with the small group we have now, don't get me wrong, I'd love to have more people. And we're getting ready for February 5th. But what I've seen the folks here on our staff accomplish in the last several months has been just really remarkable to me. And I'm so proud of them for what they've done, because it's fighting through when you're tired and fighting through times that you're doing somebody else's job and you're not even finished with what you're supposed to be doing. And I'm already asking you to double over and go do something else. So.
Right.
They've been great, and I think the sky's the limit for some of the young kids I have working here and what this organization is going to be in the future due to these people.
So kind of talking about that, the season coming up, do you have open positions now, like that we can, you know, help post for you to everyone out there? Is there any needs that you have?
Absolutely, and I appreciate that, Andrew. I mean, we right now are trying to go as quick as we can, but kind of similar to what I was preaching a little bit ago, you can't go quick and get the wrong person.
No.
So we're making sure that we cross the T's and dot the I's and have the right fit here. You know, the sales side of things is the one area that certainly we had to part ways with in the off season because there wasn't anything to sell for the most part. I mean, we tried to piece together what we could, but you know, where I went from a staff of 10 to 12 full-time sellers down here in Tucson, you know, we're down to a couple now. So we're ramping that back up. We do have jobs posted on Teamwork Online that cover the corporate account executive side, the ticket sales account side, and then accounting as well. So there are some areas that we're trying to just piece back together to make life easier for everybody here. You know, but, you know, where we normally would have a staff of, you know, a couple dozen people, we're going to go a lot leaner this year, and it may last for a little bit. But, you know, anybody that would love to work for the Roadrunners and be a part of our organization, keep your eyes open because we'll continually be looking to ramp up and fill those roles and put the positions back in play as warranted based on what this season's going to lead us to.
Yeah, no, that's good. And I'll make sure that I repost any of the things I see out there, hopefully help get you as many eyeballs on it as possible.
That'd be great.
What do you do outside of, you know, hockey, since hockey's been kind of your life here? I mean, are you a big golfer? I mean, I know Arizona's got a lot of great golf courses. What else is there to do there?
Well, I feel like a sinner when it comes to that, because I actually do love to golf and enjoyed playing a lot when I was younger. You get to Arizona and everyone says they do have great course on here. I probably have played 10 times since I've lived in Arizona. So I wish I got the opportunity to more, but it's one of those things that in the summer it's so hot and it's in the middle of our season. So there's just no time. I always feel guilty spending 4 or 5 hours out on a golf course when you can't get much done. So when I first came down here to Tucson, there was, you know, getting to know people and building those relationships with different businesses here in town, I was able to get out and play with some of our corporate partners and some different people to where I was able to do some business on the golf course. And so that part of it I liked, and to be able to come back with some production as opposed to just getting out and golfing. So, you know, I do like that part of it from the golfing side of things. My daughter, she's just started the University of Arizona. She's a freshman there, just finished her first semester. So, you know, being a big part of her life and there for her every day is something I really pride myself on, and trying to make sure she's a great citizen. So certainly definitely focused on the family and things that we can all do together.
Cool. How far is that up in Phoenix, the college, or is it?
No, it's the one right down here in Tucson. So okay. She was looking at a couple different spots, and I didn't want to pry and be the parent that said, stay here. So I was pretty happy when she kind of made that decision. So I think I want to go to the University of Arizona. I'm like, oh, that's a great idea.
I was like, yeah, my daughter's going to go as far away as possible.
I like if you can get away. I mean, it's about a 30-minute drive from the house, which is just, I'm there if you need me, but yeah, you can go live in your own place.
That's what she was about an hour and a half away. And it was, I told her, I said, look, at some point you're going to just see my car there because I'm just checking things out. So just know that I pop up there.
You're being a parent.
It's tough. It's tough being a dad to a girl. So. Absolutely. But no, that's cool, man. I love that area out there. My friend was just down in Phoenix and we were talking about it, 'cause I was always like, you know, I have not explored the western part of the US really. You know, I mean, we've gone on some trips, but we haven't spent a lot of time out that way. So that was an area that we definitely want to go check out. And I like to drive cross country. So I want to kind of go through, you know, if I was going to Tucson, I'd be coming through like El Paso, right, from the east, and then kind of go up that way. That's probably the way that I would go, kind of loop lower in Texas and go up. So,
well, it's funny. This is a great place to visit. My college buddies will come out all the time. And, you know, it's usually around this time of year, a couple of months from now, because when you get into the month of March and you're dealing with spring training games, which it truly, if you're a baseball fan, there's nothing like it up in Phoenix. I mean, you've got 16 teams, I think it is, that are all, you know, 50 right minutes apart, and you can catch just about any game you want, see all the great stars. It's beautiful weather. It's not too hot. It's sunny. So you know, the baseball part, but then at that same time, you've got the Phoenix Suns playing, you've got the Coyotes playing, obviously. So you can really put in a great sports week. So I've had college buddies that have made their way out here, you know, flying on a Sunday and not leave till a Saturday. And we'll catch just about everything you can catch over the course of that week and get out on the golf course a little bit as well. So, Arizona is a great place to come in and vacation, visit. And there's tons of things to do all the time down here. And if you're an outdoors person, The mountains, the hiking, the trails, all of that's a big plus as well.
Yeah, it looks cool. The only thing that freaked me out a little bit was I saw like a sandstorm or some sort of windstorm. Have you been a part of any of those?
Oh yeah, there's been a few. You get probably one a year. It's the craziest name, but they call it the Haboob.
It looks scary, man.
When we did the Name the Team contest down here for our franchise in Tucson, that was actually a top three candidate, was the Tucson Haboobs. The Roadrunners won by a landslide just due to the history of the name in Arizona. But they do happen. And they are, you know, the one thing people don't, because once it's on you, you don't really feel it as much as when you see it coming.
Right. Okay.
So when you're in the middle of it, it just feels like it's a little cloudy. Right. And with that, though, you're getting sand in your face and you better close your eyes, or, you know, you could get sand particles in your eye and stuff. So you need to get inside if you see one of those coming.
That's, yeah. I'll be inside. That's for sure. I'll be the salt.
And the scorpions and the snakes take some getting used to as well, as they're everywhere.
Like in the house, and like the scorpions in the house,
depending on where you live. But oh yeah, I mean, most people in Arizona, just it's just a fact of life with it, and you may they're not. I mean, they're deadly to people that might have conditions or young kids, but you know, the stink doesn't feel good.
I can't tell my wife that, she'll never go.
I've had relatives that have come out, and we'll joke with them. You can go out with a black light and kind of look outside, and they glow. So I'll take a relative out with a black light. Say, here, let me show you something. I'll show them at the first look, and they go running back into the house. But you know, I'd say most people in Arizona probably see one or two a year in their house, and you kill them, get rid of them, and go with that. But I've heard of horror stories that I don't know that I could deal with, of homes that may have been built like on a nest. So the people that's, you know, they've seen 20 in their house in a couple month period, I'm like, I don't think so.
Yeah. No, that raid isn't going to work on that.
Not at all. Not at all.
Well, Bob, man, I appreciate you joining me, man. It was good connecting with you, kind of, you know, hearing your journey, and you got the season coming up. So good luck with that. And, you know, let's definitely keep in touch.
Sounds good, Andrew. I really appreciate you having me. And you know, if there's anything we can do for you down here as well, let us know. We really appreciate you doing a great job. Keep it up.
Hey, podcast fans. Thanks for listening to today's episode of The Andrew Haynes Show. If you enjoyed it, be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions, be sure to reach out to Andrew on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.